The Pepper and Dylan After Show podcast is brought to you by James H. Brown and Associates. If you have questions about claims and injury law, get real answers from James H. Brown and Associates. All you got to do is head to jameshbrown.com. Yeah.
The Pepper and Dylan Show. Kiss 91.7.
This is all right.
Pepper and Dylan, yeah, you hear them on the radio. They've been together since about 14 years ago. You must be here because you got nowhere else to go.
No.
Thanks for tuning in to the After Show Show.
Welcome to it, the After Show Show for January 13th, 2021.
Uh-huh.
Please rate, subscribe, subscribe.
And subscribe.
Am I saying it wrong?
Say it again.
Subscribe. Am I not saying it right?
No, you're missing the B all the time.
Subscribe.
Yeah. No, you said
subscribe.
It there, but
subscribe.
Before you said subscribe.
Subscribe.
I'm not going to be picky anymore.
You just were. Subscribe.
I know. It's a hard habit to shake.
Subscribe.
Oh, guess what?
Better
listen
back.
To
Here we go.
This.
What?
So Kristen, my ex-wife.
Yeah.
Can I say? It's kind of private.
I don't know what you're doing.
She's been dating. Can I say that? That's fair.
Holy shit.
This is a real kick in the pants. I don't know if I should be proud of this or a real kick in the pants here.
What has happened?
She's dating an English teacher who is also a writer and loves to correct people's grammar.
Oh, look at that.
And he's a football fan.
Look at this.
She's dating me.
Oh, no.
What, just a better looking?
You know.
No, I'm just asking.
Probably.
Okay.
Probably.
You haven't seen him?
I have not seen him.
Okay.
No.
That's nice. She's in a
I don't know how many dates they've been on or whatever. You know, like that's kind of the area where we don't really talk a ton about our romance. Well, I talk to her all the time about my romantic life. She doesn't talk to me about her romantic life because it makes me incredibly insecure 3 years later.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Mm-hmm. It's a little hypocritical. I understand. But hey, that's me. So, but what a kick in the back. Like, date somebody who doesn't have good grammar.
Didn't she do that for a while? Didn't she date that guy that was shirtless and sexy?
Yeah, he was.
I don't know why I think he's shirtless all the time, but that's just how I've been.
He rode a motorcycle.
No,
didn't he?
He rode a motorcycle. No, he wasn't shirtless, Dylan, but you could see his body through his shirt.
Yeah, that's the problem. That was the problem.
I didn't like that either.
Tight shirt guy.
Yeah. Very, very picky about who my ex-wife dates.
It's still none of your business, though,
it's none of my business.
Right, yeah.
Yeah.
I
want her to be happy.
Exactly.
She wants me to be healthy.
Mm-hmm.
And she saw to it.
Right.
Absolutely. Yes, she did.
Jesus.
That was, the last time you were on an after show, it's been 2 months at least.
Yeah.
Since we last heard from you on an after show show. Mm-hmm. Because remember, you got sick before you went away?
I know. I got a flu or whatever. And then I had to get, because we have such strict policies around here,
mm-hmm.
then I had to get a COVID test and you guys had to go home.
Yep.
And okay, yeah.
It's been a while since
you've been a bit of a wild ride for me. And then I never even came back to work. Before I knew it, I was in rehab because I celebrated my negative COVID test with alcohol.
That was the problem.
With drinking.
That was part of it.
Yeah.
The last time we saw you
was
for the after show show. On the 18th.
Well,
that
would
have been it.
Perfect timing. Perfect timing.
And then here we are, a long, long way away.
Yes.
And a lot has happened. And I imagine today the after show show will be based much on the inner workings of how that all went down.
Ask me anything.
And what took place. I only know from what my point of view was, right? That's all I know.
Mm-hmm.
Clearly you have all the answers.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was that after show show. You went home. After you went home, the next day, you had texted the show and said, hey, I have some symptoms. And I'm immediately the first one to say, well, don't come in.
Yeah, and I was going to come in,
but
I don't want to create an issue or anything like that.
I'm very thankful that you didn't come in that day just because, then it just, as soon as one of us is sick, it's like almost 2 weeks off for the show in some capacity.
Yeah.
And so, I just didn't want that to happen to any of us. And then we had to do a couple at-home shows. And then the last time I ever heard or kind of seen from you was I was dropping bread off at your house while you were busy drinking.
Mm-hmm.
That's the last time.
Mm-hmm.
And then you were gone.
Mm-hmm.
And so tell us what that's like. Tell us what happened. Where was it from your point of view? Because you didn't come into work and then you came into work today.
So those days there's some emotions obviously in those days, right?
Yeah, no doubt.
And there's some things that I'm going to choose not to talk about, just because they involve other people and but as best as I can say what happened, and I'll be completely as open as possible. So that was a Saturday that you came by to drop off bread.
Yeah.
And I went to, because I was cleared. I got a text message that morning saying that I was negative, COVID negative, mm-hmm. on the Saturday morning. And I went to get groceries, and then I stopped in to see Sherry. Mm-hmm. And then I left and I started drinking. And Sherry and I were not together at the time, right? We had broken up. Mm-hmm. And she didn't know the extreme, I think, of my drinking, right? We had ended our relationship, but we were still talking a little bit. And so I went and I got drunk on Saturday. And then I went and I got drunk again on Sunday, because I wasn't going to, actually. No, I probably would have. But because I...
Who knew the extent of your drinking at this time?
Yeah, nobody.
No one. And I know that that's why... Hang on, I got to slip that around.
There you go.
I know that that's why that a lot of people, not just you, Dylan, but a lot of people were really kind of upset or annoyed, right? Sherry being another one. Mm-hmm. You being one. Mm-hmm. Nobody knew. Nobody knew the extent, because I wasn't telling anybody, because it was just a world of shame. Right. Now, I'd get caught. You could make assumptions and presumptions, and people would know but not know, and say but not say. And I was.
The thing that I noticed is you were functioning so well.
Yeah.
Like, there's no way we would have known.
Not near the end.
You seem a little tired or something.
That's...
We were having fun on the show.
Yeah.
Like, it was not affecting the show.
But it just...
But it would have been affecting the show. I know you always say it doesn't affect the show.
It wasn't a huge red flag, like, oh, Pepper's hungover.
No, now that I can look back at it, I can totally... yes, it was.
No, but there were signs that I would see that like, when looking back on it, like, you're tired and, like, you're groggy and you're misspeaking and your thought process was
just
junk.
No clarity at all.
And, like, I'm not going to attack you, obviously, on the show about that, but I noticed it. I'm just like, what's going on? Like, like, it seems weird. I didn't necessarily know it was all, like, drinking and hungover or whatever, but I was just like, you're getting old at an incredibly fast rate.
And that's what I felt. I felt I was getting super old.
Right.
Right? Because I was so...
You weren't sharp.
No, I was so blind to it. I thought, oh my God, is this what aging is like?
Right. And like, so like, to have you back today versus what we had before, I can tell you how much alcohol was affecting the show.
Mm-hmm. Oh, me too. Totally.
That's true.
Totally.
But
totally.
At the time, I guess, because Robbie's correct. Like, we were still having fun.
Having fun. But one thing that I do remember, you brought up the Santa Cinema thing like 2 months early. And for some reason that stuck with me as, why are we doing this right now?
Right. It was very weird.
For I know that's like just random to bring up.
You didn't even like Santa Cinema in the beginning, like talking about it when it was like normal.
It was early, wasn't it? Now that I think about it.
It was so
and it was
early.
Like all we did a whole day on it. I was like, this is all we did today. I went through all the clips.
And it was like October.
Like, yeah. Like,
no, November 1st or something.
And then things kind of spiraled from there.
Yeah. Yeah, that was it. Santa Cinema was my final trigger.
It was. That was what happened. So nobody actually knew.
Nobody knew.
I mean,
nobody knew.
There was assumptions. There were many pleas, like gentle pleas for help along the
from
way.
From others?
No, from you.
From me,
like, you had mentioned probably for a year and a half, jokingly half the time, some really serious moments, like when your son had confronted you or your daughter had looked after you after being drunk or whatever.
Yep.
There were moments where I thought, oh, well, that one's going to change him.
Right.
One right there, when your daughter has to clean up after you being sick from drinking and just the shame you felt that day telling us, I was like, oh, that one, that's the one that's going to do it.
Yep.
And then another one would happen and another one.
Well, and there was Sherry's 40th birthday last year, right?
Right.
And there's, you know, where I arranged a big birthday party for her and went upstairs and passed out.
That's right.
All of her friends were there. Like, there's endless amounts of regrets and shame that I have. Endless amounts.
Sure.
And I don't even know where to begin with a lot of it.
Well,
right?
Yeah, and there was like still when I was back together with my girlfriend, how long ago that was, when you came over to the house and just got totally wasted and you were supposed to have an important talk with Sherry at that point.
Mm-hmm.
So like, we witnessed it.
The charcuterie party?
Oh, yeah.
Well, that was kidney stones.
No, that's when I got kidney stones. That was kidney stones.
That's a debate whether it was kidney stones or not.
Well, no, because I passed them a few days later, remember?
Alcohol and kidney. Maybe you didn't want it in the same.
Well, my kidney wasn't functioning. I found that out while I was away, because they do a lot of medical screenings.
Oh.
My kidney was in rough shape. So the kidney stones came probably there. It was the link of some sort.
There always has been. And the one thing that I have known about you and why you were able to get away with it so long is because of your consumption issue, that you would just, that was your default
just liquid.
Right, but that was your default to make everyone, like, you know, when you're trying to hide something or you're trying to make it not sound like a big deal. Oh, yeah, no, it's no big deal because blank, mm-hmm. right? People do that all the time. But mm-hmm. you would say, like, oh, I just drink a lot of anything. Mm-hmm. And then I would witness with my own eyes 8 to 10 beers in mm-hmm. a sitting go down.
Yeah, yeah.
And yep. in my head, every time, I'd just be like, that's freaking crazy.
Yeah.
Like, that's, nobody should be able to, let alone have a normal conversation or stand or walk away from this. Mm-hmm. And that I witnessed, and then I was just like, but the excuse was always like, oh yeah, no, I just have a consumption issue.
That's the thing. Only an alcoholic can spot an alcoholic. I had that conversation yesterday, actually, with somebody who reached out to me on Instagram because she's struggling with her partner about this. And he's just lying, and she said he hides his drinking. Sometimes I can't even tell if he's been drinking, and he's been drinking all day.
Right.
And I was like, yeah, no, once you get to a certain stage of addiction and abuse, like, only the others can recognize it.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Mm-hmm. You can pull it off in front of almost anybody.
Did you
even smell like it, but you don't smell like it. Like, you figure out ways.
Right.
So did you get to the point where, like, drinking just made you normal? Like you hear that, like heroin addicts, for example, like, they don't feel that extreme high when they become extremely addicted. They just need that to feel normal again.
Right.
Maybe a little. Yeah, maybe a little. Maybe a little, because I know I'd get home from work and I would have only gotten, you know, 3 hours or 4 hours sleep, and it would have been drunk sleep, mm-hmm. and I'd be hungover here, and then I would leave and I'd be super tired, but I didn't want to, because I'd tell myself every day, okay, well, I'm not going to drink today, right? Mm-hmm. It's like 8 a.m, I'm like, I'm not going to do that, and then I would just feel like such crap that the only way to make me feel better would be go out and drink, and then I would feel fine.
Right, so then the answer is yes to your question, yeah. Absolutely.
And then it just got cyclical, and like not knowing, I mean, we all know, but not realizing that like how important of a role sleep plays, like a decent quality amount of sleep plays in your general health, and the fact that for years I wasn't getting decent sleep. I was getting drunk sleep or hungover sleep or whatever it might be, right? Mm-hmm. And not enough sleep, et cetera, and then not eating well because all I was doing was drinking my calories.
Right.
And hundreds of calories.
Mm-hmm. Well, oh, yeah.
I mean, you think about, you know,
per beer.
15 to 20 beer a day.
That's just so wild to me.
And then not eating because I'm full.
Right.
So that's no nutritional value, mm-hmm. an excessive amount of calories,
mm-hmm.
right? And then no physical conditioning, no exercise. I'd exercise once and be like, whew, I don't need to do that. Or I'd celebrate. Good for me. I did a workout and I'd go and drink.
Mm-hmm.
And so those three, the combination of those three, right, is the unhealthy diet, the lack of sleep, and the no physical fitness. No wonder I look the way I look in that picture you showed me today.
I didn't take it to make you upset. I took it because Robbie and I were looking through videos yesterday because we're trying to get these cameras working in here.
Yeah.
And we both, because when you came back from rehab, when you walked in the door, we're like, holy smokes. Like, it was such a, it was amazing to see. You're like, holy smokes.
Yeah.
Like, I working with you guys every morning, I don't realize
you don't notice it.
No. But then when we were looking, I saw you that day, and then we were looking at videos. I was like, holy crap, I got to take a picture of this just so I can show him, more so you could be proud of yourself.
Oh, yeah. Oh, 100%.
Because I have the before picture, and you're now the after picture.
Yeah, I'm not proud of it because it was alcohol, but I'm proud of it because if I was able to, like, that's just simply, a large 80% of that weight loss is just not drinking. Right. Like, it might be a little bit of exercise and eating healthy and getting proper sleep, but that's just not bringing aboard all those calories.
Well, is it true?
I've lost probably 35 pounds, I would guess.
Is it true? And I'm going to touch on things here that maybe you don't want to go down, so you can always just say no.
Do whatever you want, yeah.
Is it true you were going to a bar right after the radio show? Like, there were days where
Well, no, because they weren't open right after.
But like at 11 o'clock when they would open, you would be in a bar?
Not every day, but yeah.
Multiple times.
Most times, yeah.
Yeah. By yourself.
Yep.
No one. Who else is going to drink at that time?
And because I had this dumb thing where I convinced myself that as long as I was drinking at a bar and it was beer, that I wasn't an alcoholic.
Mm-hmm. Right.
I tried to convince myself.
Right.
Like, which is like
a bottle of whiskey by the bed.
Yeah. Like, I wasn't drinking. I wasn't drinking vodka in my car.
Did you never get too hard alcohol?
No.
No, so it was always beer.
Yeah, because
beer and wine.
Yeah, and wine. Yeah, I would have wine.
Which I want to talk about the wine story so bad, but I don't want to trigger you or anything, get you mad.
What's the wine story?
It's with your wife.
Mishap?
It's the funniest wine story I've ever heard of. It was at that moment when your wife told me this. I was like, what? This guy's such an idiot. I was so mad at you. So what ended up, can I tell this story?
Oh, about the delivery?
Yeah.
It made sense in my head at the time.
I cannot believe how this took place and that this is the point you were lying. This is the deep of your lies.
The depth.
The depth
of your... depth of my lies, not the deep of my lays.
He's back.
Yeah.
The depth of your lies was so it was so wild because your wife had told me this story, and I couldn't get into your mind frame, like your headspace. I couldn't understand how on earth this made sense in a drunk person's head, a sober person's head, your head for a second.
It didn't make sense. Yeah, at the time it did, because I was just trying to get out of being caught for drinking. Yeah.
Okay. So she's got her new boyfriend. They're having a night together.
I didn't know he was there.
Yeah, he was there.
And this is when Pepper was sick.
Yeah, this is when he was
originally waiting for your COVID test.
Right.
Right?
Yeah. It was the day of the COVID. Can I tell this? I don't want to upset anyone. Is this fine? Kristen's not going to be upset?
Mm-mm.
Yeah. Okay. So she told me that they're sitting there together and there's like a knock at her door, and it's quite late, like a 9 o'clock knock or whatever, which at this point in this day and age, anything that you don't expect at 9 o'clock is scary.
Mm-hmm.
Where so she goes to the door to open the door, and it's Skip the Dishes. And hey, we have your delivery. And she's like, I didn't deliver anything.
I didn't order anything.
Or, there was nothing. I don't have anything. And then, this is for you. Is this your address? And she said, yes. And he's like, okay, this is for you. And she's like, well, what's the name on the order? And they say, well, it's Rob Patrick.
Mm-hmm. That's me.
Yeah. She's like, he doesn't live here. That's not for me.
I live
whatever
right
it
behind
was.
Her. Yeah.
Right. Completely different address. It's not like it's 24 Donald Place and 27 Donald Place.
Okay. I know.
And then, so she calls
I do
you
have
on
a defense for that
you
part.
You can't.
No,
there's
I do.
No
I do.
Way.
But continue.
Okay, okay.
So then she calls apparently him on it.
Yeah.
And said, because she, the way she told me the story is because her and I had a talk prior to her putting you in rehab.
Yeah.
And she said, you know what? There's a weird story I have to tell you. And she told me this weird story. And I'm like, where's the weird story? This is 100% no story. There's nothing there. Because she said, she then asks you about this delivery.
Yeah.
To which you somehow.
Yeah.
Denied.
Yeah.
And said, nope, I didn't order it.
Yeah.
But they had your name and her address.
Yeah.
There's zero chance that mistake would have been made ever.
You know who did fall for it?
Who?
Skip the Dishes.
How?
They refunded me.
What?
But I was drunk, and when they were messaging me, I'm like, oh no, they've got good points. Because I ordered it. But
so
I was
your name on it. She calls you on it. You say no. She went the next day because she just thought, oh, you must have been drunk or something.
Yeah.
And you lied to her again to her face.
You don't want to get caught.
But how do you lie about something so obvious?
Okay, so I just want to clear up one thing about that. And this is why I thought my lie would work.
Okay.
I'm not defending the lie. I'm defending why I thought it would work.
Okay.
Because oftentimes with both Uber and Skip the Dishes, and I don't know why, they often drive past Donald Place and go into her Crescent. And so when you're watching like the map of the car, I don't know why it always happens, but they go in and then they turn around and come back. It's like a glitch with the map because Chris and I live so close together. That I think sometimes the address, I don't understand.
But 24 Donald Place and like 18 Edgeworth.
I know. It doesn't make any sense, but for some reason that does happen. That's aside from the point. I don't know why that happens, but that's what I based my lie on.
Right.
Was like, oh, they just delivered it to the wrong place. Well, I don't know. But then she's like, but you ordered it. I'm like, no, I didn't. That's where I screwed up.
But it had your name on it.
Because all I could have done, I know, that was the weird thing. All I should have done was just say, now this is old Pepper.
Right.
New Pepper, just be honest.
Yeah.
Old Pepper would have just, or old Pepper should have just gone like, yeah, I just thought you'd want a bottle of wine tonight.
Right.
It just made sense to do that.
Right.
But I dug my heels in and I was adamant. No, I didn't order
You had
anything.
Better lies too, because it was your anniversary. You could have said, I sent you a bottle of wine for our anniversary just as a little tip of the hat to 20 whatever years we had.
Oh, shoot.
I know. It was.
I didn't think of that.
That's what she originally said. She thought maybe you were sending wine for the anniversary.
Well, she was on a date with another guy.
That's what I was like. There's no way he did. There's not a chance on the world.
No, I ordered myself alcohol and then it never came.
Yeah.
Because then she's like, well, I'm not giving it to you. And I'm like, I didn't order it. I don't want it.
Oh, my goodness. But so that's where your lies got to.
Yeah.
But in retrospect,
that was a good one to be busted on because it led to you getting the help you needed.
True.
Right?
Very true. Very, very true.
It was part of the path, absolutely. But I just, when I heard that from her, I was just rolling my eyes going like, oh my God.
Well, rock bottom was not far away for me, right? Like you, I know one of the touchstone moments of me headed towards rock bottom is when I came in here one morning and I'd been just like given up, right? Like, and you guys are like, what are you doing with your life? And I'm like, who cares anymore? Everything's fine. I'm just going to, you know what? I'm just going to do it and see where it goes.
Right.
I'm just going to live this life as reckless as possible and see what happens, which is basically code for let's laugh while you watch me die.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's what it was. And I don't know how that made you feel when I said that.
Oh, that just led to some of my anger.
Yeah.
I mean, just because it was like, it's a helpless place to be.
I had given up.
It was a very hard position to be in our side, just because we had heard for about a year, and like it had come up in this room so many times.
Wow.
And there was no, I remember our boss at one point sent us all like an ADAC thing or whatever it was. Yep. Or Robbie had talked about how he would go with you because he had thought maybe perhaps he drank too much.
Yep. It's one thing I've always wanted to just rid my life of.
Right.
Right. But it takes that extra step.
Yeah. And then you would talk about it but there's literally nothing we could do except listen to it. And then tell you, yeah, that's something you should look into. Okay, it's getting worse. Okay.
Yep.
Yeah, but I also feel like we took advantage of him a little bit too over the time.
How so?
Because I didn't really know how serious he was.
The depth of it. You didn't know the depth.
Exactly. So it's something you said, oh, he's just having a bad day. This could be a fun day. Let's see what he's going to say today or stuff like that. And just kind of see where it goes selfishly for the show.
Well, that's because nobody knew how bad the problem was.
Right.
I didn't tell anyone. No one knew.
So just looking back, I felt bad the whole time you were gone.
You know the person who might have known the most? The server that I would see that worked daytimes at the bar. Honest
Probably.
To God. Honest to God.
Because they would see how much you drink and then they'd just be like, wow, that again on a Wednesday at 11?
Yeah.
Weird.
Yeah. And maybe my kids.
Yeah. That's sad.
But they only,
That whole idea behind your kids and what they had to witness and what they've had like, that's got to be tough.
Yeah.
Not fun.
I said on Instagram Live yesterday that on the weekend when my kids came back, I wanted to have, we had a serious conversation about where I was. And how that made them feel. Not where I am and how that made me feel. And not where I was as in rehab, but the place in my life that I was before going to rehab. Mm-hmm. And my son, typical 50, but my daughter just said, I hated coming here. I hated coming here.
I can tell you, growing up with my dad who drank alcohol, who had his buddies over all the time, who drank alcohol, I believe, every single night, who was absolutely an alcoholic for most of my childhood. Most of my adult life, it was weird. It became sort of a norm to me, but bothersome norm. And I had brought it up in therapy, just the fact that when I was 14, 15 years old, I used to sit in my bedroom with such anxiety and praying that my parents would make it home alive because they would be going to a work party or something. I knew Dad would be drinking and driving. I just knew it. And it became so hard as a child at that point. And then throughout my life, you kind of you grow up or whatever. And he just became annoying. He would just get drunk and think that he's the funniest guy. Mm-hmm. And you have these serious conversations with somebody and you're all right, I told him this and it's awesome. And the next day he would phone me and he'd be so what's going on in your life? And I'd be just the thing we talked about yesterday. He wouldn't remember a thing.
No, I can't remember shit from the last 2 years.
And it was so heartbreaking. And so it got to the point where I really didn't want much to do with him in a serious matter. Mm-hmm. And he quit cold turkey. It's been, I believe, a year and a half now. Mm. And when he did, it was the greatest thing to ever happen. He is the greatest guy to sit and talk with. The conversations are amazing. His mood was amazing. It was like he was reborn. And that's why, for me, a lot of the similarities with when you would come into work foggy and forgetting and be weird and not have your train of thought.
You'd experienced that before.
I knew exactly what that was from where my dad was. And I just knew that my dad quitting and the difference it made, I was just oh my God, it was so, life was so much easier.
Yeah.
I loved talking to I still do. I love talking to my dad now.
Yeah.
And his clarity is insane. I thought my dad had Alzheimer's. How do you say it?
Alzheimer's.
Alzheimer's? Why did I call it Alzheimer's?
Alzheimer's.
Alzheimer's. Alzheimer's?
Yeah. Alzheimer's. Yeah.
So I thought he had that.
Subscribe.
Just shut up.
All right.
And I thought he had, I thought he was losing his mind. Mm-hmm. I thought that oh my goodness, he's going to have dementia or whatever the case might be. I literally thought that for a couple years leading up to, alcohol did this to him. And nobody really realizes that alcohol is as bad as it is because it's so socially accepted.
Yeah, it's funny. We had that conversation. I don't know where you want this after show to go.
Everywhere.
So, I don't know if other people want details. I have honestly no clue. I'm open to telling almost every story.
Great. Let's hit them.
Every experience that I'm feeling. So I don't know if you want to do it in parts or however the hell you want to do it. But I'm fine with it if you find it interesting. But one of the conversations we had at rehab. Now, I got to say, rehab, recovery they prefer, health center they prefer. Rehab just has a stigma to it. The word rehab. Oh, my God, my boyfriend's in rehab. Oh, my God, my mom's in rehab. Rehab, rehab, rehab.
We used rehab when you were gone
a lot. Because it's the most understandable what it is. It's
just
the easiest. You say he's in a recovery center. You don't know what the hell that means, right?
Yeah, he could have broken your ankle.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because we started, I think there was times where he's in recovery or he's on the West Coast and then people didn't know what we were talking about.
Yeah.
And then people thought you had weight.
Addiction treatment. Yeah.
Right. I mean, then they thought you were on crack and I was like, I don't know what to do.
Yeah.
I don't know what to say here.
I wasn't on crack, although there was a guy that was there on crack. And I got to tell you, you get an idea of what a crack guy looks like.
Right.
And then you see what a crack guy looks like.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty normal.
Yeah,
right.
Guy's pretty normal.
Right.
And that's what I kind of learned is everybody, there's a heroin guy, there's a ton of cocaine. Like, holy shoot.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm.
A lot of cocaine, you guys.
Right.
And alcohol. And alcohol being the most physically damaging and the most addictive and difficult to get off of, I think, save for heroin. But when we were there, we didn't talk a lot about our particular addictions or just addictions in general. It was more about the mental health aspect. And I could get into all of
those. Why? Because was it triggering or you just didn't do it? Because like in jail when you don't ask somebody like why they're in.
I see what you're saying. No, because the goal there is to treat what precedes the addiction.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense?
Yeah. Are all addictions preceded by something?
For the most part, yeah. It's like 90-something percent of mental. There's mental health issues, right? Here's a good example, and it doesn't just apply, but the place also specialized in people who are suffering from PTSD, mostly military guys, right?
Right, right, right. Right.
And by the way, PTSD is awful.
Isn't it PTS now?
Oh, I don't know. No, PTS. I don't.
Anyway. Is it?
It's post-traumatic stress.
Post-traumatic stress. Yeah. As opposed to a disorder. Anyhow. So the example, let's say the example is for them, right? Just so you can kind of understand it, that trauma, whatever it was, that post-traumatic stress that they experienced away at war, whatever, right?
Sure.
There was one guy that fell off the top of a battleship. And he was thrown off. But anyway, that trauma led to the alcoholism once they were released from the military. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. Right.
So they started that trauma.
So was alcohol was the escape then?
Well,
at that
so
point?
Let's just follow this generic chain of PTSD, okay? So the trauma, the military's trauma, okay? Let's say I see my side partner, my military buddy, step on a landmine and explode.
Oh.
Okay, sorry, it's grisly, but let's just say that's as the example.
Right.
So that trauma, right? And then what's next? Can't sleep, anxiety. What's next? Nightmares. Crippling nightmares. There was a guy there that you could hear him screaming down the hall every night. He has not had, since he was discharged from the military, he has not had more than 45 minutes consecutive
sleep.
That's
torture.
That really is.
Right? And most nights he gets almost none. No matter what meds he takes, right?
That is why
nightmares.
People take their life.
So there you go, okay?
Right.
So and then you get depression.
Yeah.
Just from the physical lack of everything, right?
Sure.
And then along with that, then bang, that's where someplace, and there could be other links in the chain, but that's where addiction comes in.
Mm-hmm.
That's where it's just your next step in self-medicating is a pretty common term, but that's the chain. So what they try to do there and what good facilities do versus bad, there's dryout facilities, there's 12-step facilities, and they're just trying to get you to bow to alcohol and stop the addiction,
mm-hmm.
the alcohol or the drugs or whatever. But what the good places do is they recognize that it's all the links before the addiction that they need to fix.
Right.
That's not going anywhere, right?
Sure.
Like watching his buddy step on a landmine will be in his head for the rest of his life.
Right.
But what they do there, and they do it through all different manners of treatment, like I was hypnotized, like just all these different, and whatever works for you, works for you. And the PTSD guys stay a lot longer than the addiction guys. Like they're 90, 120 days kind of thing, right?
Right.
Mm. But what they do is try and be like, okay, this guy on the landmine, for example, that's not going anywhere out of your head, but it doesn't have to lead you into the future. So how do we unpack that and your soul that bears that vision and it was your buddy and you feel responsible? How do we get that out and massage it and stretch it like plasticine so it thins out a little bit so that you can go back to some semblance of normal,
mm-hmm.
which would then lead to fixing the stress and the anxiety, which would then lead to fixing the nightmares and the sleep, which would then lead to fixing the depression, which would then lead to fixing the alcohol. Right, so it's like reverse engineer your addiction.
Yeah.
Which sounds to me like the only place.
It makes total sense, but this is the trick. And with mine, which is one of the things that I'm not comfortable talking about right now, maybe one day I will, but with mine, it took me, you know about it, Dylan, and it took me years. Now, I always knew about it, but it took me years to figure out what it meant.
Right.
And I had all these weird things bouncing around in my head, like ping pong balls.
Right.
All of these ideas, all of these thoughts about things that I had done, things that I had done in the past, but never thought there was any connection or relation to all of it. I thought, okay, so that had happened. Oh, that thing had happened. That thing had happened. Oh, I'm an alcoholic. Oh, I've got depression. All these things. Mm-hmm. Just random events. Just random different events that lay out the course of your life.
Right.
And it wasn't until on my own individual journey within that place that I, by happenstance, decided to just start writing again. And I just started to write about my experience and the development and like all of these things bouncing around in my head. And for the first time in my life, I finally got these all these different characteristics or stories or actions or behaviors out of my head, down my arm. It was very cathartic, onto the paper. I wrote it out. And then after reading it and editing it and reading it to myself and reading it to myself, I was like, holy crap. I see how it's all linked together.
Mm-hmm.
And holy crap, all these pieces bouncing around in my head, the puzzle, jigsaw, Dylan, is now together. And then I decided in the ultimate moment of courage to take this into my small group. We do 2.5 hours of small therapy group, a group of like 8 or 9 guys. Mm-hmm. I took that and decided, because once a week somebody reads their life or tells their life story so you can kind of learn from why they're there. And I decided to read that, what I had written, as my life story. Things I have never told anyone.
Mm-hmm. What was the reaction?
Anyone. And this is a group of guys, 20, 30s, some of them like dudes, right? Real dudes.
Yeah, yeah.
And I was nervous to reveal some of the things that were in there. And they all just accepted it, hugged me, and I think it changed my trajectory. As I was reading it, I felt lighter and lighter and lighter, and I was able to look at it in this figurative way of a chain. Like I said, right? The landmine to the anxiety, to the nightmares and the depression. And I was able to look at my thing to this thing to this thing and realize that while 100% accountable for all those decisions, at the end of it, I don't need to put my life now on that chain.
Right.
I can create my own chain. Right? Like those links will always be there, but I can start a new chain.
Mm-hmm.
And the minute I realized that is when everything changed. And that was about my 2.5, 3 weeks in. That's when everything changed. And that's when I started to, and then it snowballed into this level of accountability, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like understanding who I was in that chain and looking at the good and the bad. Specifically the bad.
Yeah.
Why was I so bad in relationships for so long? Why was I this? Why was I that? And just looking for it in that chain and realizing I don't have to be that anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what it was.
Okay.
So that's why I said, you asked this morning, Dylan, on the show, do you have cravings for alcohol? No.
None.
And it's not because I identified the chain. It's because I've realized that alcohol isn't the problem.
Right.
It's the last link on my old chain, and I've started a new chain. Now, I'm not going to go near alcohol. Like, I can go to the, I'll be able to go to the, like, I have to, right? Be around people, be around alcohol. Like, you can't avoid it forever.
Sure.
But I'm not, I'm not.
Well, and another thing.
No cravings, no anything.
Another thing Dylan mentioned today is, like, he said, we might have to kind of treat you like a snowflake.
Mm-hmm.
Just because we don't know what's good. We don't want to trigger you.
So I'm high anxiety, right? Always have been. But just being on a compound for that long, it is weird getting out. It's wild and strange.
See, and in my head, and you can tell me I'm wrong, you had it better than Robbie and I did during this time. Because, like, if you think you're home alone, you would have had nobody.
Right. No, totally.
Like, Robbie and I were isolated during COVID to the point where, like, we weren't allowed anybody.
Yeah.
I spent so many days by myself.
Sure.
Yeah. I thought at least what you have there is you
surrounded by 25 people. Yeah.
Right. You have doctors and a bunch of friends and you're watching football every now and then and you guys are having chats.
There's a social environment. Right. Oh, for sure.
So at least you had that because I don't know what would have happened to you had you not gone away when you did.
Mm-hmm.
And given the isolation that we were experiencing as people who lived alone, which is what you would have been as well.
Yeah.
Right? You would have been by yourself, aside from a week on, week off with your kids, at the height of your addiction.
Yeah.
It could have got bad because you left before the deep restrictions.
Day before,
right?
Well, no, I guess I left. It was funny. It's perfect timing because Kristen and Sherry were at my house the night before I left.
Right.
And that's when they announced that school was ending.
Right.
And so I was like, see you later. And then I got back on and then school started on Monday.
Right.
So like I was gone for the whole school closure thing and the home learning thing. Now I'm back.
Right.
School's back. Right.
Yeah, you timed it as perfectly as you could.
I dodged some great bullets. Yeah.
Right.
I think and as far as COVID goes, like there is a silver lining to COVID in that like I don't have to be in the hustle and bustle. Like I can kind of dip my toe back in easily.
Mm-hmm.
So the snowflake treatment is just it's weird. Like it's you're spending literally 6 hours, 5-6 hours a day just focused on like yourself and deep emotions and like trauma and all of that. And it's pretty, it's exhausting. It's emotionally exhausting and very depressing sometimes.
Right.
Super depressing. But then also super uplifting. So, so that's going to just take a little while to get out of that. And then just holding myself accountable, not just to others, but to myself to actually focus and be good to myself. Which I haven't been forever, right? Like, we've made fun of that for years, how insecure I am and how I hate myself. But, you know, that's not a good thing.
No.
No.
Learn that.
No, absolutely not.
So, yeah.
What was it like to come back to Kristen, who ultimately
is ex-wife,
who is the one who put you...
Spearheaded it,
I mean, like, your ex-girlfriend and your ex-wife were the two most involved in actually getting you into a facility. There's a bunch of us that talked prior to it, but it was, like, Kristen who's just like, nah,
this is it. Sharon kind of fired it up, our friend Sharon from
Calgary. She started the ball rolling.
She started the ball rolling because I sent her some text messages that sounded very depressed, and she was worried, right?
Yeah, like, from my angle, I had three warning shots and then you're out.
Mm-hmm.
And the first one came from your ex-girlfriend to me and we had a conversation.
And about the suicide attempt?
Yeah, she told me about a suicide attempt that you had in great detail. And I was like, oh, that sounds bad. And I called you directly after that phone call and just yelled at you. She's just like, what the hell's the matter with you? Yeah, why didn't you talk to me? Where were you?
Yeah,
blah, 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 blah.
Again, it was shame and you know, like, just look, fuck, man. Pardon me. Sorry, Robbie. You might have to mark that down. Sorry. I was in a bad, I've been in a bad place for a long time. And that suicide day was not planned beyond the hour before.
Sure. And I mean, when I called you on it,
I didn't want anybody to know. Like, I just.
I know. And that made me so mad. And I get it. Like, you didn't want anyone to know, but that would have been the last time that anyone knew you. And that's what really bothered me.
That was
like the fact that like there was no one new, no reaching out. You got busted is basically what ended up happening. And so when I heard that, I was just like,
Sherry walked in.
Right? I was like, what on earth is this? And like I tried to make jokes about it just so you didn't feel as uncomfortable about it.
Yeah.
But I was just like, what the heck? So that was the first. And then you told me, no, it's fine. It's fine. It's fine. It's fine. That was way.
There's your denial. There's your alcoholic denial.
Way in the summer. You have nothing to worry about. Okay. Yeah. So then I was like, all right, I'll just let that go. We'll come in, we'll do the show, whatever. And then my, I guess there was four people. Then my friend Sean contacted me and be like, hey, is everything okay with Pepper? Like he keeps reaching out with some weird things. I was like, yeah, no, I don't really know. There's something going on. We're trying to figure it out. But he's like, yeah, I'd keep an eye on him. And Sean, infamous for the 10 year ago one, when I was in Europe, Sean and you had connected a ton during that time.
Mm-hmm.
Right before you hit rock bottom at that, or I guess what was rock bottom at that time, which we found out wasn't your rock bottom. but like, so I was just like, I don't know. I'm going to keep an eye on it. I'll watch out for that. Then you reached out to one of my friends who's a doctor, just so happens to be a psychologist.
Mm-hmm.
Out of the blue, like a year since she had talked to you with some random weird messaging.
Mm-hmm.
I was just like, okay, And now there's something here. There's I got to investigate this more. So I'm looking around and I'm feeling around, but I'm annoyed by it because I'm just like, oh my God.
Because I'm not telling you.
Right? Like, I don't know what's happening.
I don't want you to worry. I don't want you to know.
Right? So I'm like, I'm annoyed by it. And I'm kind of losing interest in it, to be 100% honest. I'm losing interest in this. I'm just like, I don't know. Like, what the hell am I supposed to do? I've talked to him. He says it's fine, but clearly it's not because all these people keep out of the blue contacting me.
Mm-hmm.
And then it was Sharon, your friend from Calgary, who contacted me that I hadn't talked to in over a year as well.
Mm-hmm.
With like, hey, I think some things are wrong. And I was like, oh my God, like something has to happen. And she's just like, what should we do? And I didn't want to do anything at that time. I'm just like, you know what? I don't want to deal with this. I've tried. I've dealt with it. Like, I've dealt with this before 10 years ago. I've already dealt with this. I do not want to deal with this again. I don't know what to do. And then she's just like, well, like, who would be important? I'm like, I don't know. Why don't you call his ex-wife? She's got the kids. They have a connection. She's got the most skin in the game.
Mm.
And so she called your ex-wife and they had a chat. And then like 30 minutes later, your ex-wife calls me. And that is at that moment, there was no stopping what was about to happen.
Mm.
And she is the one who at that point was just like, we're sending him to rehab tomorrow. You talk to the bosses. You make sure he can get the time off. I'll make sure rehab happens. I said, okay, perfect. I think I called Robbie that night. I called our boss that night. And everyone was okay. Yeah, he needs it. Yeah, okay, he's going to go away. Yeah, okay, perfect, wonderful. And then Kristen went over to your house, I think within like an hour.
Mm-hmm.
And that was it. That was the last I had heard from you.
Mm-hmm.
That was the last moment. I'm like, all right, go deal with that. Robbie, how the hell are we going to handle this?
Yeah.
And that's where we left off. So what was it like coming back to Kristen, who ultimately had to do everything for you at that point, then take your kids the entire time, look after your house, look after your cat, look after your life, look after... I believe the payment as well.
Right? Don't worry about that. We'll figure that out.
We'll figure that out later.
Huh?
I just remember her telling me the price. And I'm like, there's no way. So I went on the website and the website lists the price. I was like, oh, I guess there is a way. Yeesh. Oh my goodness.
Yeah.
And so what was it like to come back to her?
Awesome. I mean, she was great.
You've been best friends with, you've broken up with, you had a relationship that failed because of you, because of her? Like, what did you learn?
Because of us.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, and then you come back to her and what was her reaction? Because God, I think about you in the point that there's so much pressure coming back on something that's already so difficult, especially when you didn't make the choice ultimately for yourself.
Yeah, I didn't make the choice, but I certainly didn't refute it. Like,
sure.
Yeah, let's go.
But like, so you have her as obviously the first and foremost, like this is your chance. Like you can't mess this up. And having that sort of pressure sucks.
Yeah, it does. It certainly does. And it's, if I get caught up in the pressure of not messing up for others, then I'm ultimately going to fail.
Right.
Right. If
sure.
I get too caught up in that, but it's easy to get caught up in that. It was one of my big concerns about coming home, right?
Yeah.
With a handful of people. Like, you know, Robbie, I was cool with. Robbie was super supportive. You, I was concerned about because you and I didn't talk much while I was away.
Mm-hmm.
Kristen, I was concerned about because she has so much invested in it.
Right.
You know, and a few other people that I felt like I'll be under a microscope, so to speak.
Well, how exposed would you feel? Because not only them, like the entire, like our entire audience.
Well, see, that's a double-edged sword. A lot of people were like, wow, that's so brave of you to share. And we've shared everything. So like, I don't know any other way and I wouldn't want it any other way. And I also felt like it might help people understand. Because here is the most significant thing, first few steps of somebody with an addiction issue. And the thing that means the most to them. Doesn't necessarily mean they're going to be a success or not. But when they find out that their behaviors, feelings, emotions tied to their addiction are shared by and their actions are the same as every other addict.
Right.
The lying, the shame, the cheating, you know what? Like it's like you're having a love affair with alcohol, right? That's how we all set it in there, right? Alcohol or whatever your drug of choice or your vice of choice is. It's like you're having a love affair and you don't want anybody to know about it. Like you're sneaking around with your drug.
Right.
And I felt alone in that until I saw that we were all the same.
Right, right, right.
All of us. we were destroying our relationships, our friend relationships, our spouse relationships, our partner relationships. We were just reckless in destroying them all. We were making horrible decisions, like every single one of us. So that's really almost reassuring to know that the level with which you have screwed up is the same as the level with which everybody else. Now, the details might change. The faces might change. The stories might change. But the actions are all the same.
Right.
Doesn't make it. Doesn't justify any of it, no. But it makes you feel a little more welcome and a little less alone. But not everybody understands that. So when you get out, you feel that everybody's waiting for you to either screw up or prove to them.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so I was really torn about, well, crap, like I get home on Wednesday. Do you think I can show everybody by Friday I'm better?
No.
Do you know what I mean?
Right.
And how unhealthy that is. So it was a real wrestling match in my head of do it for me, do it for everybody else. Do it for me, do it for, and there's an obvious answer.
Sure.
But it's easier said than done.
Yeah, I could imagine.
So, you know, was a struggle when I got home, but I knew that Kristen was going to be supportive because she was supportive all the way through. I mean, she was amazing. She was amazing. Her and Sharon and a friend of mine, Pam, they were amazing.
Right.
My friend Scott.
Right.
Was pretty good. Scott was good because he knew to check in every couple days.
Yeah.
Kristen got a little annoying. Every single day, right? How you doing? Sharon was every single day.
Well, she had a lot invested in it. Yeah. All the money.
Yeah, exactly. But like, no, it was, so like I had some people there that, and a lot of people didn't know, like, oh, what are you doing having your phone there? You shouldn't be allowed your phone. And this place
is kind of telling at first.
They treat you like adults there, right? Because they realize that it's not a dryout center.
Right.
Right. There are some places, right, that are basically prisons, one step above prison.
Right,
and this was definitely not that.
Right.
Because who would pay that for prison? Anyhow.
So much money.
Yeah, so our relationship is great, right? She's often concerned about what I'm up to. Like, she texted me the other day on Friday, and she was texting, and I wasn't answering. I was doing other things.
Right.
And so she just phoned me in a panic, and she's like, is everything okay? Like, where are you? What are you doing right now? And that's going to be her behavior for a little while.
Sure.
You know?
Sure, that's understandable.
You know?
Right. You can assume.
Yeah, it's not a bad thing.
Anything else? Whatever you want to know. I mean, I don't know. We could open it up to email or whatever. Like, I'll share almost everything.
Almost everything.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, that's, it's interesting to hear what you had to go through, what you went through, what we were going through, what everything looked like.
Yeah.
From the show standpoint was different.
Oh, I can imagine. Like, that's rough. Like, when one of you isn't here.
Mm-hmm.
It's just whatever combination of the two is really challenging. And to do it for 6 weeks, right, is a completely different dynamic. It's impossible.
Yeah. I mean,
let's be honest. If I wasn't here, the Pepper and Dylan show would go on. You could get a little
it would, but it would take some time.
It's a little bit of a different role, but with you gone, it was just, it's impossible.
Well, the only reason, Robbie, that it would go on is because we've had to do it so many times because you quit so many times on this show.
You are the one to quit the most.
Yep.
I am.
Yep.
Yeah, I know.
You always are the quitter.
It's true.
But you always find your way back, which is lovely to have.
Because it's fun. I just enjoy the time in here.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I'm happy. I'm excited to have a better version of the show moving forward. Because, Robbie, you say that it wasn't noticeable, but it was. There were things that were noticeable. There were things that continually kind of came up. And it's
when he was going. Oh, you mean before he,
right? Like, and having you back this morning, like it felt fun.
It felt like an hour.
The honest truth, and I don't like saying this because it really waters down what we do, but the honest truth is like how easy our job is when all of us are here. Like this morning, like it was so easy.
Mm-hmm.
And it was so fun.
Mm-hmm.
And I just
give credit to our audience too. Like, holy moly, the amount of just... good God. I don't think we couldn't have done it without them when Pepper was gone.
No, they were amazing.
Right?
They stuck by.
Make it so easy on us.
They were there for us day in, day out. Everyone was supporting you and wishing you the best. And
just sticking with the junk show, knowing like, okay, this isn't how it's going to be.
Right. Just knowing that you would come back. Knowing
just standing
that you would
come by
back.
Us.
And then I got even more pissed off that you almost took your life because you almost left that show permanently. It almost was the Robbie Dylan show permanently. Which I was just like, oh my God.
Yeah, that would have sucked.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Not for the show.
Yeah, for the show, of course. Yes, yes, of course. Of course.
It sucked for the show.
Yeah. I mean, your life would have been great for.
But it would have been great, yeah.
It wouldn't have been great for the show, that's for sure.
Yeah. Well, it was also good. You know, I do feel like when you were gone, it was it helped me grow a little bit more. Mm-hmm. Kind of get just more confident in that seat if you do go away again, or if you guys have an...
Going away again.
No, I just mean like if there's a week of holidays, I've never filled in on a show. It's just like, okay, if it's not the full show, let's do the whole show.
Oh, by the end, Robbie, you were like a different person. Like, if you go back and listen to the first week of Robbie's show, I'm not saying it's Robbie's fault. It was like our show, but like talking to Robbie was talking to the wall.
It's tough.
It was that's what it was.
Well, we both grew, and then near the end, like I lost Dylan... Whenever the mic would go on, he'd have something to talk about. He'd always bring something, which was a source of anxiety for me to begin with.
Right.
But you just made it easy to do. I was like, okay, Dylan's got something for sure here. Yeah. So hit Dylan 10 seconds. Oh, okay, here we go.
And you were great by the end. But at the beginning, I was just like, holy crap. There was moments where I thought I was just going to quit radio.
There was one week I remember. It was just a grind. Just a grind. I exploded to you on the phone, Pepper. So sorry to do that while you were in.
No, that's okay. I had nothing else going on.
You know, I just...
That's fine. I was glad to hear from you. That was the thing. I couldn't come on the air for insurance purposes because I was on short-term disability and they wouldn't allow me to do anything. But it was good to hear from back home. Like, I was craving that, right?
I was trying to keep it normal for you, like borrowing your car.
Yeah.
Talking about the sunsets. Yeah. You know, all that stuff. That.
Yeah.
Funny.
So...
I'm sorry, you know.
No.
And like I told you guys off the air and the other day though that like, and don't tell my kids this, but when Kristen pulled up to my house to tell me I was going to rehab after she had gotten off the phone with you, Dylan, I started to cry, and
you were drunk at the time, were you not?
Yes.
Right.
And I started to cry, and I just said, "But what about Dylan and Robbie?" Mm-hmm. Was the first thing. Now. Probably not what a father should say.
Sure.
But that was the first thing I thought.
1 week on, 1 week off.
Was what about you guys? You know?
Right.
Because I love this job. Like, I love this job. I have so much fun doing this job. Right?
Yeah.
And, you know, it's almost worth getting up at 4 a.m. for.
Almost.
Yeah. And that was my first. So, like, not being able to be part of it for so long was, like... I didn't care about Christmas, missing New Year's, missing my birthday.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't care about any of that. I cared about missing the show.
Yeah.
And because I know how shitty it is when there's only two.
Mm-hmm.
And how hard that would be for 1 week, let alone six.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I'm not going to say I'm sorry because I've learned a lot about the word sorry. But I'm indebted and I'm grateful.
No.
For you guys, for being able to kind of have my back, you know, truthfully, when you're suffering the way I was suffering with an addiction and really can't find a way out, like you do worry about your livelihood. Like people lose their jobs, man, if they keep living this way.
That was the other thing that was definitely a trigger point for me in the very, very beginning, because like everyone's downsizing right now.
Yeah.
COVID-19, people are losing their jobs like crazy. And it's just like, why is he giving us a reason right now?
I know.
For potential of us to lose, like, and we were doing so well right prior to it, as far as
never been better. Is that right?
Yeah. The show is like at an all time high.
Well, it was
right. We're at 15 years, and then like we were just sailing, and things were still going well on the show.
Yeah, we felt somewhat safe in a tumultuous industry.
Yeah. Sure.
Somewhat safe.
Right. And then you're rocking the boat. I'm like, don't bring attention to this.
I know.
Not now. But then like you struggle because like I'm mad internally at that. And then I'm going, well, ultimately.
Yeah, it's going
to
be better.
I know that if you go, I just kept saying to like people around me, I just, if he goes and you got to be an idiot not to come out of there learning something. Now, I didn't expect you to come back a different person.
Carrying crystals in my pocket?
Well, then no.
God crystals. Everybody loves charging their crystals in the moon now, eh?
Yes.
When did that become the thing to do?
Alongside plants.
Plants and crystals. It's insane.
That's what it is.
Everybody knows the moon cycle now.
It's weird.
You know who else knows the moon cycle? Mm. People on the BC coast.
Yeah.
Because of tides.
I tell you.
I cannot understand tides for the life of me.
Robbie's
so low tide. High tide, low tide.
Whatever. Controls so much.
Well, I think it controls like if you whether you can leave or not, doesn't it?
I don't know what a tide means. Like, just get in a boat. Right. You know, don't make a big deal out of it.
I think you need to, or you won't go anywhere in the boat.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, it was just all of that. I just thought, okay, you're going to get a better version coming back. And that's what I just kept on reminding myself. Like, you got to be pretty bad at self-awareness after 6 weeks of like six doctors a day and 6 hours to not come back enlightened to some degree. Now, it changed. I didn't want that necessarily because I felt like if you came back changed,
I was worried. I was worried I'd be down and hokey.
Right?
Yeah.
It would be too much of an act. It would be too much of a trying to impress other people. But I thought you'd come back enlightened. You'd have to.
I am definitely enlightened.
Right? There's no way that you could go away. And then so, because behind the scenes, like you and I didn't talk.
Yeah.
We did not talk until December 23rd or whatever it was. That was our first conversation.
That's almost a month.
Yeah, yeah. There was nothing, right?
3.5 weeks.
Yeah. And then that was our very first conversation and we didn't talk. So I just figured, okay, well, like coming back, all I knew in the back of my head is the show is better with you. Mm. We've done it for 15 years and it is so damn easy to do together because of the relationship we've had. And that if you weren't coming in hungover, drunk and lying all the time, that there's no reason that shouldn't be good.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I just kept telling myself in the back of it, right? Because I mean, Robbie, you were great during it because you had to play middleman.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Because you would hear me and my complaints and you would hear Pepper and his complaints. And we would both be going to you with them.
Yeah, I don't think Robbie was playing middleman. I think he understood both sides and he recognized both sides, but he just wanted us to get along.
Right.
He just wanted it to be fixed.
Right.
Yeah, I was in the middle, but I wasn't. I understood where both of you were coming from.
Mm-hmm.
Because 100%. We were both right and we were both wrong.
Yeah. Again, right. Pepper was dying to talk to you, but I understand why you wanted to kind of just take some time and let him do his thing. So it became stressful at times, but...
Yeah, you and I, Robbie and I were at the height of our stress the week leading into Christmas.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I just, the week before that Christmas break, and God love our boss who just said at the Friday, because I think we're supposed to work the Monday and the Tuesday.
Mm-hmm.
And Robbie was supposed to do the show by himself on the Tuesday because I had an extra holiday day. And on the Friday,
that was the Christmas Eve,
right? Yeah, whatever it was. And she just came in on the Friday, the Thursday before the Friday and just said, hey, tough time. Friday's your last day. You guys need to get out of here. And that week leading up to it, that was like the only light at the end of the tunnel. And at that moment, it was just like such...
You could decompress.
It was such a relief to hear those words because we were at the height of our... height of anxiety, height of all the stresses of the show, height of just the stresses of the relations. And then just like all the excitement that was coming from Christmas that normally would come from Christmas, and then we get the pandemic added to it, and like all of a sudden you can't go to people's houses, and you're not allowed to have a regular Christmas, and now you can't see anybody. So all of it all just like at once. And so that's why I said earlier, and I believe like you were in a better place at that time.
Yeah, I see what you're saying. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Just because
I didn't have context for what was going on. The only thing I had was when Robbie called me a couple times and vented, and then I vented back at him, and it was just like probably not great. And that was before the enlightenment, right? Before I wrote that thing.
Mm-hmm.
You could definitely tell when Robbie and I were talking, you could tell a difference between me from 1 week to the next, right?
Yes, yes. Like 100%. A huge difference. There was one conversation we had.
Yeah.
I'm like, this is not good.
Yeah.
This is not, you were fired up. Like,
Robbie thought the show was going to end.
And I thought so too.
I didn't know.
Well, I did tell him I was going to quit a lot.
Okay.
So maybe that's why.
And that's the thing. And I'm sitting here, I'm like, okay, this might have to be my job going forward. And this is not what I signed up for.
Right.
Although it may seem like a more glamorous position sitting in Pepper's chair doing the Pepper thing. That is not what I came here to do.
Right. Yeah,
there's a lot of glamour in my life. I've saved though, you guys.
How much, honestly, can you say that?
Do you
want to
know?
Yeah, of course. I like these are real statistics and numbers that I think are important because somebody is listening to this right now and somebody is in your shoes on either, someone's in my shoes or your shoes, right? On either side of what an addiction is.
Or like Kristen's shoes or Sherry's shoes or Tyler and Riley's shoes.
Absolutely.
Or, yeah. Now the faces and stories are all different, right? Everybody's got a different tale, but I did the math. Well, I was in and it wasn't an assignment. I thought I'd do it. And because I paid for everything on my own personal credit card because I needed to get those points.
Mm-hmm.
And
that's how they get you.
I was spending, I think we've talked about this on another after show show, but fuck, maybe I was lying about that too. I don't know. I was spending between $800 and $1,200 a week.
On alcohol?
Yeah.
Dear God. Including meals?
Yeah.
Or just alcohol?
Like restaurant bills?
No. That was what I was spending a week on my credit card.
To live is $1,200 with
no,
bills?
No, on the alcohol.
Oh my
and
God.
And everything else was on top of that. Yeah.
$1,200.
Robbie's just trying to see
times
how much 50, does he make?
52 weeks.
It's a lot.
That is a lot of money.
Mm-hmm.
What is it? I mean,
I never had an extra penny.
Over $60,000.
Yeah, I was in debt. Yeah. I was in debt. I was putting it on my line of credit.
Holy smokes.
I would just transfer my credit card balance.
Did that not seem like a problem, though? Like, in your head? Like, how does that work? I don't understand how it works.
Here's what I said to that girl the other day who's struggling with her partner who's going through this, right? This is what I said to her. I said, he loves you, right? He loves his kids.
Mm-hmm.
He loves his family. He loves his job. He loves his coworkers. But he loves alcohol more.
That's all it was.
That's all it is. So don't think that somebody who's got an addiction is just a piece of crap and hates everybody and is no good for nothing and worthless and all that. They like, oh, that guy, we shouldn't let him near his kids. And maybe you shouldn't because of the safety factor. But the fact is, they do care about you,
mm-hmm.
right? They do care about you. But they're just controlled by this
yes.
goddamn addiction
mm-hmm.
that makes it so hard to think of anybody or anything else. I can look at my bank account all day.
Mm-hmm.
Sober me, clean me can look and go, what was I doing?
Right.
Drunk me goes, yeah, it makes sense.
Yeah.
Right?
What, and it's just cyclical. At what point did it become so cyclical that you
habitual? Your,
yeah, that's, yeah.
No, about a year ago.
A year?
Yeah, a year and a half ago.
See, and the one,
I had a pretty nasty depression that I'm still trying to unpack, which is some of the stuff that I'm not really comfortable talking about right now.
Yeah.
But yeah, I had a pretty nasty depression and... I didn't identify it because alcohol was already part of my life and I couldn't identify exactly that I was that depressed, but I could tell you that the only thing that got me out of the bed, there was two things that got me out of bed every day. One was coming to work and one was getting drunk later that
Jeez.
Day.
Jeez.
That was it. See, or else I would have been a depressed sack of crap in bed, blinds closed, the whole thing, crying all the time. It was a mess. It was an absolute mess and I could never figure out why. That's which led to the August suicide attempt.
Right. It's interesting. Can you... and I don't know if there's context here or not, but can you understand how people end up homeless?
Oh, 100%. 100%.
With that, with like just that need, like you just can't think about anything but that.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No, my empathy, and it's empathy. It's not sympathy. It's empathy now.
Right.
That I have for those who have
the difference is you feel it?
Times. Yeah. Yeah.
Versus you feel for
it's
it.
It's more of a feeling as opposed to an understanding. Right. And the empathy that I have is because it could be anybody.
Mm-hmm.
It can be as simple as anybody who doesn't get the help. But if people are going to refuse the help, they're not going to want the help, right? They're not going to go and do it. And they're not going to be successful. Like I told you, there are stories of guys, you hear it all the time, the success rate of recovery is not great. Like there are stories of guys who, like you said, you knew I was going to learn something.
Mm-hmm.
There are guys that don't learn anything.
Right.
And they get out of there and they're getting a beer at the airport.
Right.
Yeesh.
Right. See, the one thing that kept me in contact with you during that year that it was deep and understanding that there was something wrong in the back of my head is because you're a jerk. And the truth is because you nitpick spelling and punctuation and grammar so much that when you would send a text message, whether it be to a boss, to the group, to somebody...
Mm-hmm.
I could just tell that's not Pepper.
Yes.
That's not real Pepper talking.
Yes.
100% I could read through a text message and go like, you might think you're lying to me. You might think you're a great liar.
Oh, yeah.
And you might be lying to everybody, but there's something's not right here.
Yeah.
You would not allow this to be sent out at any day, at any moment, unless you were under the influence.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And so then...
Oh, yeah. There are telltale signs.
Right. And then, and then that's when the
why is Pepper texting me, telling me how much he loves me? That's weird. out of the blue like that.
That's an odd thing to do. Yeah. Right. So there was things that I just... And that's when I kept getting more and more frustrated because I would question, you would deny, you would lie, you would lie, you'd deny, I'd question.
It's nothing... Like, I know this sounds so excusey, but it's nothing personal. it's the only person it's personal to is me because I'm so ashamed by it. Sober me is ashamed by it. Drunk me doesn't want anybody to know.
Mm-hmm.
Right? That's all it is. Mm-hmm. Like that's it. That's all it is. Like I lied to my parents. What chance did you think you stood? I lied to my kids. Yeah. I lied to everyone.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah. Everyone.
How did your parents end up taking it?
They were really supportive.
Yeah.
They knew I needed help. Yeah.
Sure.
Everybody knew. Right. I knew.
As
a diet starts Monday, right? That's
right,
what it was.
Right. Well, yeah. And you had done that how many times?
Yeah.
Right? Yeah, I'm quitting. Yeah,
AA,
I'm quitting.
All that stuff. Right. Just didn't work for me.
When AA, you got in a fight with the guy at AA, is it because you were drinking?
Flipping guy.
It was because you were drinking.
No, I wasn't drunk at the time.
No, but you...
There were AA meetings where I was, though.
What a waste of your own time.
Oh, totally.
Like, why
but I had to,
waste
but I had
your
to
own
continue
time?
With the facade that I was going.
It's so wild to me that you, like.
Oh, I went to all the AA meetings I said I was going to. I went to all of them.
Sure.
I just didn't get anything out of it.
Yeah, right. But you argued with a guy about your number, and he was saying that you need to have your number. And you argued because you couldn't give him your number. Because
I didn't know which one it was. Because everybody had a different number. I was telling everybody different numbers. This person was 14. That person was 30. That person was 9.
Right, right.
I couldn't remember how many days clean I was because the truth is I was 0.
Right.
0.
That's the problem.
Right.
But I assume that. You and I got in a fight on the after show.
That's right.
Over that because I'm just like, well, you're being a jerk to
AA. Now that I'm clean, I don't know my number.
Right.
Right. Because I don't care to. Because I'm just
But this is different because this is the actual honest.
Yeah.
Moving forward.
Okay.
Moving forward.
Yes.
You see a sign or something like that. What the heck do we do? What do people do in this situation?
So it's depression related. It's all depression related.
Sure.
Okay. I've got one nagging thing left on my plate that I want to get rid of. It's a weight that once I can unpack that, I think I'm going to feel even lighter than I did after I wrote everything down.
Mm-hmm.
I know I'll feel lighter because it's my one last thing that I've got to figure out. And then after I do that, I'm hoping that leads to a little bit of an easier life that I have to live with depression. For so long, I've been trying to figure out how to cure depression.
Right.
It can't be done. So now I've accepted, I wrote a story while I was away about just living with depression. And so now I've accepted that it's just part of who I am.
Mm-hmm.
And what I need to do is feel it and accept it as opposed to try and deny it and fix it. And I think that's going to help my depression a little more, me living with it, right? I'm going to live side by side with my depression and learn to understand it more as opposed to loathing it, right?
You said something on one of your lives, and I forget exactly how you put it. Either you choose to live with it.
Yeah, or choose to die with it.
Yeah, and that's sat with me.
Your depression will tell you to die. You can tell your depression to live.
Right.
It's what you want to do.
Right.
It, right.
Any insight?
Spoiler alert, that's how my story ends. What?
Any insight? Because I think right now, it's being overlooked in this city. Some people are doing really well with COVID.
Yeah.
But I think we're hitting that, like the holiday excitement's over, right? And I think for a lot of people, it's like, let's get to the holidays. And then holidays happen and you get through Christmas and all that kind of excitement. It wasn't quite the same this year as it would have been. But I think like the fatigue is really starting to wear on
COVID
people.
Fatigue?
Yeah, as far as like depression. And for people who have never felt depression before, starting to feel that loneliness and that isolation and that depression, especially people who are living alone, those people who aren't allowed to have many people over or are social people by nature, I think it's really starting to take the effect.
Oh, for sure.
And right now, I don't know if you learned anything while away, if there was anything, like, because I just think right now, more than ever, I bet you there are people feeling depression for the first time in their life.
Well, so a couple things. So one is the boredom is a killer. A lot of the guys that were in there were like, COVID boredom is what put them over the edge, right? And then they were drinking all the time. Just
like lost their job, had nothing to do.
Lost their job would lead to depress, and but just being bored, getting home from work and having nothing to do.
Even working from home,
though. Just working from home.
Sure.
You can easily pour yourself a drink at any point if you're working from home.
Yeah,
so that was one. The other one was, modestly, as best, it was very humbling, actually, when I would do these Instagram posts and these lives and the number, the sheer volume of people that would message me and the number of people who are saying, you know, a percentage of it was addiction related and then a larger percentage of it was mental health related.
Mm-hmm.
And the number of people who would say, and the largest percentage would be the people that are saying, like, since COVID, I've been feeling this. right?
Yeah.
What should I do? And like, I would offer advice as best I could, but the number of people that cited COVID as the thing that put them over the edge, that led to their addiction or
right
overuse or just mental health issues. Like, so to answer your question, COVID's massive.
Sure.
The suicide rate has gone up. Divorce rate has gone up. Spousal abuse has gone up.
Mm-hmm.
So, but I asked this question then, and I don't know, you'll probably won't have an answer, but I'm interested in someone who knew they had a problem, recognized they had a problem on their own, verbally said it to coworkers, friends, that they had a problem.
I think I know who you're talking about.
Yeah, you do. And then would go about it, went into AA, and nothing was going to work except a $50,000 program. And for most people,
it's pricey.
They don't have that ability.
Nope.
So that's a tough one for me because, like, I believe that anyone in this room, anyone listening right now, could go to that facility and learn a lot. And
it's not just for people who suffer addictions. No. That would be good for even the most sounded and grounded person in the world.
See,
doing that.
Like, I heard amazing. What you got.
Yep.
And I thought, this is awesome. Yep. He goes for a swim. You got to go out on a hike in the woods. You got to learn about yourself.
Hiking. I know, but I didn't go hiking. Right? They went on hiking excursions. I was like, have fun, guys.
But I thought it was awesome. You got to learn about yourself. You're talking about yourself. You got to learn about your inner workings. You got to learn about your trigger points. You got to yoga. And I'm like, this sounds like somewhere I would want to almost go on vacation.
Summer camp. Yeah, right? You would. It's an expensive vacation.
That's the thing. Yeah. So like,
they'll take anybody. But they specialize in addiction.
Yeah, but here the thing is most people don't have the means to have that. I don't think you have the means to have that, but you're going to have to figure that out on the
back like I end. Said in one of the lies, it's like they call it life savings because I'm saving my life.
Right. Yeah exactly. Yeah. So
a year of not drinking beer.
I'll pay this off, right? No problem. So go ahead, Dylan.
But like, what do you say to those people who don't have that readily available? Because like you knew you had the problem.
Yeah.
You knew something had to change AA didn't work.
No, step one is the acknowledgement. Now, AA does work for some people.
Sure, it didn't for you.
Okay, for me, I didn't love it. Step one is the person suffering with the addiction themselves has to acknowledge it. Friends, family, everybody can tell them until they're blue in the face. If they don't go like, okay, I want help, then...
Do you remember when you actually realized you had the problem? Because it wouldn't have been the same time we did.
It came in waves, right? Like, it came like, holy shoot, I got to do something about this. To like, oh my God, I think I'm an alcoholic. I'm an alcoholic. To like, I can't do this myself. Like, it's just stages, right?
Okay.
But so one, you got to just be like, okay, I got to do this, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then the second part, the most important part, and I kind of touched on it earlier, to me, if you can't afford the stuff, and I would be very leery of the government ones, they're more of a, like, from all the guys that I talk to, they're not the best experience. They're not the most helpful experience. You got to really.
These were guys that were in there again after.
Yeah, I've met guys that have been in different facilities, 8, 9 different facilities that are finally trying this one. And I met guys that have been to this one already. It's not perfect. It's dependent on the person. Right. That's why it's so important for the person to want it. But I would say the first step in this, and it'll lead me to two things that I want to talk about. But the first step in it is to acknowledge it. The second step is to just surround yourself with a community of people who suffer or have suffered a similar thing. That's why our AA comes in good.
Wouldn't you guys all go out drinking?
You can debate the power of AA and a 12-step program and the faith-based versus non-faith-based. You can debate all that, and that's fine. But AA is not perfect, but peer discussion and peer acceptance goes miles.
Right. One of the things I got myself in trouble with when you first left is I said, Pepper's away in rehab. He was trying AA. It didn't work.
Yeah.
I said,
some people are passionate about it.
I didn't say it didn't work for him. And I got called out badly going like, don't you dare say that.
No, some people love it. Some people swear it saved their life. Why wouldn't they be in support?
Right.
Didn't work for me.
Right.
Great. Didn't work for me. There were some of the things I just didn't love about it.
Mm-hmm.
Right. But where I went did work for me. There's other recovery programs. You're never further than a Google away once you want to take that first step, but it's so important to have peer acceptance and peer discussion. AA doesn't really allow for discussion. It's more people share and you listen and then it's your turn.
Right.
What I loved about what we were doing back there, and I by the end of it, I was leading the groups, right? Mm-hmm. I'd started my own groups on the campus, and is that they're actual discussion.
Right.
Right. With no agenda. It's like, here's a topic today. Let's chat about mm-hmm. it and how it applies to everybody and the acceptance. So that is like, if nobody can do anything, that's what you got to look for. And thankfully, I have decided that I'm going to do a handful of things. And I realize this because that place is kind of the place I went to, like their kind of core goal is to identify meaning and purpose. What is your meaning and purpose? Because so many of us are depressed. So many of us are insecure. So many of us just feel untethered. And so what is your meaning and purpose? And so I have decided, once COVID cooperates, is that I am going to, first in a small sample size, but I'm going to attempt to create a peer recovery discussion that is not, there's no credibility to it other than the fact that I've been through it and I moderated it or I guess facilitated it for several weeks when mm-hmm, I was out mm-hmm, there mm-hmm. and I recognized the power of it.
Right.
So I'm going to select a handful of people once we can get together in personal groups to just participate in a discussion because I think that that's the most important part. And then I'll see where that goes. Mm-hmm. That's one of the things that I really, really want to do. And because I felt rewarded by it personally and I felt other people benefited by it. Everybody right. there really liked the job I did when I facilitated them. So I want to take that and, you know, reach out to people here who are struggling for the same thing and see if they can feel that level of acceptance and see if it makes a difference. Mm-hmm. So that's one thing I'm going to do once they say, yeah, you can hang out again. And then the other thing I want to do, which is a little more long term, and it's a little bit of a raw idea, but I want to, like you said, Dylan, not everybody can afford $50,000 to go to a quality recovery center.
Yeah.
I want to figure out a way, personally, not through the radio show, just personally, that I can lead some sort of foundation or something where it will help families that can't afford it go to places like that. Because I heard the horror stories of the affordable ones, and I don't think anybody should, well, it works for different things work for different people, but I heard the horror stories of the ones that are affordable.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
And there is, let's put it this way. You get what you pay for when it comes to recovery. And that is a goal of mine. That is my meaning and my purpose moving forward in a personal sense. Not professionally, but in a personal sense.
Okay.
Those yeah. are two things that I want to invest some effort and initiative into. And you know what? I should be able to find time because I was at the bar for 4 hours a day.
That's how long you're at the bar?
At least.
What?
Yeah.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'd get there at 11 or noon, and then I'd get a text message from my daughter saying, Dad, we're home from school. Where are you?
And you'd then come I'd home say, drunk?
I'll be home in about an hour.
Right. Huh? And then you'd come home drunk.
Yeah.
What is the biggest takeaway for you in everything that's happened during this? The missing work, the missing family, the gone away, had to, I mean, just think of the words, had to go to a recovery center.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, what is the biggest...
Well, I've gotten over that.
...takeaway?
There's a sense of pride in it now that I was able to kind of go through it and learn as much as I did. Biggest takeaway. One is, like I said, just understanding that there is just a link, but you don't need to live the link, the chain anymore.
Mm-hmm.
The links are, you know, all linked together, but you can start a new chain. That was one. The second thing would be the power of vulnerability and accountability.
Brené Brown!
Right. Just the power of it. The power of, instead of defending or getting angry at somebody or making excuses or lying, mm-hmm. to actually just go like, yep, to looking at yourself. When somebody is feeling negative towards you, to actually take those words and look at within yourself and go like, okay, yeah, I can be better.
Right.
And I guess that I was closer to death than I thought.
Huh.
Mm-hmm.
That's what you learned
physically, too. But emotionally, definitely. Mentally.
Just because it could be juicy and we deserve a little juicy.
Yeah.
Worst possible moment from the entire experience. Something you may not want to talk about and you don't have to, but I just think like our head goes there. Like, what was the worst possible moment? Like, we weren't along for the ride. What was that moment? I can see I've upset you. So if you want to deny, go ahead.
I think Robbie, you know, right?
I know.
Yeah.
How does Robbie know?
Because he called me, Dylan.
I did not. You're right. I didn't call you. I had that doctor visit with you.
What's, oh, well, yeah, the online
The mandated doctor.
Right, visit. Right.
Not talking to you was tough. Not being able to talk to you was tough. It was really, really tough.
Come up with a better, worse moment, though. Come on. Don't make me.
I'll tell you what the most touching moment was, though, was the pizza thing. I broke down. I started crying right there. And nobody understood why, because nobody had context there.
Sure.
Everybody's like, what the flip is going on around here? Why is there pizza and why is Pepper crying? Although they never called me Pepper. Sorry about that.
Rob.
Yeah, I thought that might have hit you hard just because you hadn't been talking to Dylan.
Yeah, that was...
Then boom.
Yeah.
But it gave you that hope.
Yeah. No, that was a pretty great moment. And I never really got the chance to... And I'd like to... I wanted to today, but we got sidetracked with doing other things. But I wanted to highlight that a little bit and what that meant to me. And it just reassured me that things were going to be okay. You know what I mean? Like, it was that unspoken... It was a very Dylan moment to be like, don't worry. Like, just enjoy. Because I texted you. Mm-hmm. And that's when you messaged me and you're like, don't say anything. Just enjoy it.
Yeah.
And I was like, that's pretty cool. I mean...
Especially because the day before that, I'm like, what are we going to do? And I was like, nothing.
Yeah. I know.
It was weird. It was weird, but it was so good.
The lengths you had to go to that I found out later, to make that happen.
That was hell.
Right?
Yeah, because you were on the longest 2 days ever.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
To be able to pull that off was one of the hardest things I've done in my life.
Yeah. Yeah. But my worst moment is something that...
You don't have to share if you're not comfortable. I don't want to put anyone in a bad position. I just think it's important to hear all aspects, because right now we've talked a lot about how great it was and how it was great for you, and that's important. But I just, like, there had to have been, it wasn't all great. I can tell you that. There's no way.
I'm just trying to think of the best way to say it without it leading to another 100-hour conversation. And really, truthfully, I don't know if I'm prepared to deal with it right now.
Okay, don't. We don't need to. We can come back to this on another after show. It's a question I'm interested in.
I know.
That we can find out.
I mean, it's simply something that I've just got to figure out a way to deal with it. Mm-hmm. And realizing the depth of it and, my role in it and how harmful it was is something that I got to figure out.
That's fine.
And I don't know.
Do it another time.
Yeah. Sorry.
No.
Sorry.
No, it's okay.
No worries at all.
So,
I
will. I will one day.
We will step away from that conversation and we can wrap up the after show.
That was a long one, hey?
Yeah, yeah. But I think
it's
needed, right? After 6 weeks, you had your ability to jump on the live. And I think you did a great job on those lives.
It felt good to just be connected, right?
It just felt good to hear your voice and see you. And
I was very morbid, like not morbid, but morose, right? Very sad.
Yeah, but you could absolutely see growth happening from week to week to week to week, which I thought was great.
Yeah.
And whether you realized it or not, I realized it back here, is like, whether you were buying into it or not, you still were learning. And you were picking up information and you're picking it up. So, like, I think in the beginning it was like, oh, this hokey shit.
Right? Oh, totally. Right. Yeah. Love it.
By the end, that hokey shit is who you were.
Yeah. Yeah. The love yourself first thing I've always wrestled with forever. You got to love yourself. I mean, there's
10 years ago we had that conversation.
But there's no detail. There's no context to that. Okay, great. Yeah, thanks. Got to love myself. How the bleep do I do that? Mm-hmm. It was going there that I realized, oh, that's how.
Right.
And it's a work in progress.
I'd like to learn more about that from you one day. Because Dylan always says that about me.
Yeah, I don't know how to do it. I'm just
you always say
I
that.
Have to.
You're going to be alone. You're never going to find a meaningful relationship until you can learn to love yourself.
Yeah, I can help you with that.
But it's true, right?
I can recognize that it would be beneficial. It's just easier said than done.
And the number of people, when you say it, the number of people are like, oh my God, like they have that epiphany. Like, oh my God, I don't love myself.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Sometimes you just need to be told over and over and over again, but you need to realize it yourself.
Well, because I think a lot of people are just surviving.
Mm-hmm. Oh, 1,000%.
Like, we're all surviving. There's a ton of things on your plate. Like, I really think about it like a day-to-day of an average person,
mm-hmm.
right? And it's like, wake up, get yourself dressed, get some food into you, get to a job, work your job all day, come home, make dinner, possibly get the kids in the right place, wherever they need to be, baths, showers, whatever it is, get the kids to bed. Most people, especially with a family, probably have maybe an hour to 2 hours for themselves a day, and we choose to numb ourselves with whatever it is, mm-hmm. Television, mm-hmm. internet surfing, mm-hmm. Instagram, whatever it is, mm-hmm. until we close our eyes again.
Mm-hmm.
And this just becomes a cycle day in and day out and day in and day out. And it's not that we don't want more for our lives. It's just like we're just so busy worried about surviving day to day that you don't give much thought to how you can benefit, how you can love yourself, how you can show yourself compassion or care, how you can show others compassion or care, because you're just surviving.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's what makes it so hard for everyone, is that there isn't a lot of attention given to self-love, given to self-growth, given to, like, unless you're really hungry for it, you're just surviving.
Mm-hmm.
And I think so many people are facing that. And then you get COVID on top of it, which adds another layer. And I think it's becoming more and more aware of it. That is where change is going to happen. Because not everyone is going to have the ability to go away for 6 weeks and learn. I think it's great that you did. And I think it's great that you're going to use some of the things that you learned to pass that on and to get other people inspired through it. I think that everyone can help from just taking that moment and go like, wait, how much time do I actually spend on myself?
Mm-hmm.
And not just, I'm on the couch right now and I'm not doing anything. This is my time. That's not your time. That's just numbness.
Yeah. That's why you got to knit.
Right.
Be productive.
Absolutely.
God, I'm addicted to knitting.
Yeah.
Which is awesome.
It's my new addiction. Look out. Oh, here we go again.
This is going to have the studio
start the timer.
Full.
10 years. Oh, no. I promise you, it'll be a problem.
Awesome. Well, thanks for opening up and sharing.
Thank you. And to everybody, everybody was so amazing and so super supportive. So I appreciate that. And I appreciate you guys, through all of this. It's something that I never thought I'd ever find myself. I don't think anybody ever thinks that, you know, when you're a child, you don't grow up with the goal or ambition to go to rehab.
No.
But I did, and now it's part of me, but now it doesn't have to be part of that chain. Now I can just start a new chain.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Right?
Yeah.
So there's a few more links I got to take care of, and then I can tell you all the other stuff, okay?
Okay, yep. Perfect.
Yep.
Okay. We look forward to it. Thank you.
Thanks for listening to the After Show.
The Pepper and Dylan Show.
Weekday mornings on KISS 91.7.